Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Drive the Bid video podcast brought to you by ClassicCars.com, your online marketplace for more than 40,000 vintage and collector cars, and of course, AutoHunter.com, the home of 7-day online vehicle auctions where you can buy or sell your collector car with or without a reserve. My name is Derek Shakey, and today I'm joined by my co-host, Diego Rosenberg.
Howdy.
Hello, how's it going, man?
So far, so good. Plenty of time for things to go down south.
That's the spirit. Well, speaking of down south, you did some traveling recently. We'll get into that.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. Yep. And let's see. So we'll start off like we do every show with the news, and then we'll get into the main topic, and then of course our Auto Hunter picks of the week.
Very good.
All right. So let's see.
So Mazda just announced that the CX-70, their CX-90, well, it's not a CX-90-based SUV. Let's just say they share this similar platforms. The CX-70 is going to be debuting on January 30th. We don't really know what they're going to be announcing exactly. I mean, yeah, the car is going to be debuting, but we don't know what it looks like. This is a CX-60, which is not available in the United States currently, but it'll probably look similar. The CX-70 will be a two-row SUV. There will not be three rows. That'll be the proprietary ownership of the CX-90 in the Mazda lineup. Supposedly, the CX-70 is going to offer the inline six that they have, the turbo six, and a hybrid powertrain of, I'm not really sure what that's going to look like, but it's probably similar to other vehicles in the Mazda portfolio. So on January 30th, we're going to learn a lot more, but they did not say when the car is going to go on sale. We just know that it's going to be before the end of the year.
Oh, okay.
So that's it with Mazda's SUVs.
I imagine, you know, if they're going to show it off on the 30th and then it's going on sale before the end of the year, yeah, it's probably sometime in fall. But these days, you never know. There might be a summer rollout. We'll see.
My impression is that they were not going to have it come out until later in the year, but it's been pushed to earlier.
Oh, okay.
I could be wrong about that, but that seems to be what I've read, if my memory is correct.
Hmm. All right.
So there are other pictures of this.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This is the CX-60, but, you know, we can expect the CX-70 to have similar styling inside and out.
Yeah. Oh, okay. You know, I've kind of lost track of their shifters these days. So, yeah, they got that chunky little knob there.
And my impression is it's going to be a wider version of this from what I recall. You know, is it going to be like a bigger CX-50? Maybe. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, judging by the numbers. Yeah, I mean, judging by the numbers, I figure it'll slot between the CX-50 and the 90.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I guess for a while, you know, they had the CX-7 out. I don't know when they discontinued that, but I feel like it's been a few years since that was out. So
I don't even remember it, so I think it's been a few years.
Yeah. So yeah, it's I think that's a good idea because, you know, these manufacturers are always looking for white space to fill. Mm-hmm. You know, and if they don't spot it, then consumers will let them know, you know.
And you know, when it comes to Mazda, I think they're going through this transitional period that I don't really understand with all these CXs. You know, they still make the CX-5, but they've expanded the lineup with CX, you know, something in the 10 digits. So, you know, CX-50, CX-60, CX-70, CX-90. So it's a little confusing because you got a CX-5 and a CX-50, and CX-5 is the old way of doing things for Mazda. I don't know.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they eventually just end up killing the single-digit models. You know, they just replace the CX-5 with the CX-50 and so on.
I think that may have been the original plan, but the CX-5 is still a strong seller, and it also is still a strong seller overseas. So, you know, it remains to be seen. I just don't really understand what Mazda's doing.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, you know, there is, I guess there's... there's some level of differentiation. I mean, I haven't driven any of the, you know, CX-50 or, you know, similar models. I have driven the CX-5. And there's a little bit of differentiation in that, you know, there's the styling. Like if you look at a CX-50 versus a CX-5, the CX-50 is a little more butch. Like they have more squared off fender flares. The front end is a little more, I guess, rugged or solid looking, whereas the CX-5 is more conventional, like crossover. And then the CX-50, there's a certain trim level where they make it a little more outdoorsy looking. They put all-terrain tires on it.
It's a little bit like an Outback.
Along those lines, yeah. They're trying to make it look a little more rugged.
But for the few that I've seen, because it doesn't seem to be a very popular vehicle in this area, I've seen just the regular CX-50s. I don't recall seeing any of the more rugged trim levels, there's that one rugged one, rather.
Yeah, maybe, who knows, maybe in the Northeast, the take rate's a little higher. It just seems to be following the trend of the market where these conventionally, you know, soft rotor vehicles and the companies that make them, they're trying to make those a little more outdoorsy, a little more adventurous looking. So like Honda is really, you know, is adding to the trail sport lineup and, you know, offering all terrain tires and things like that. And then even the, what was it? We covered it on the show before, the Santa Fe, I think the new Hyundai Santa Fe, that looks like, you know, a cross between like a
retro futuristic.
Yeah, it's like
those.
Yeah, it's like a Land Rover and like a Grand Wagoneer or something mixed. So, that seems to be the way of the market, and they're dipping their toe into that.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really cost them much money to offer an upgrade like that.
Yeah, and you know, they're able to cast a wider net, and there's not a huge amount of differentiation or, you know, additional engineering required, I wouldn't imagine.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, my interest for showing this Mazda is not because I like SUVs, because I don't, but I have owned a Mazda before, and I did look at the CX-50 when they came out, so I'm just interested to see how they're expanding.
Yeah, and that's a good spot to get into, because I think they've had a hole in there for a few years.
I think Mazda, you know, some of my confusion with what Mazda is doing, partially maybe because of their movement, but also partially maybe because of their lack of movement. You know, maybe things haven't fallen into place the way they had planned, you know, as far as like these models coming out.
I don't know. I would imagine, you know, since these products are planned so far in advance, I would imagine, yeah, the pandemic had something to do with, you know, interrupting the flow of these.
Yeah, but look, I mean, yeah, the pandemic interrupted a lot, but look at, let's say, Hyundai or Kia, you know, they've been very consistent with new stuff. So it can be done, but, you know, each manufacturer, each model is different with different supply chain issues and workers, if not union issues, you know, so who knows?
All right. Well, speaking of automotive news, so right now, as we speak, the Consumer Electronics Show is taking place in Vegas, goes until January 12th. And that's, you know, for those of you out there who aren't familiar with the show, that's where a variety of manufacturers and tech companies go to show off their newest products and innovations. And of course, Mercedes is there, a very tech-heavy company, and they're showing off one of their advancements, which is MBUX personal assistant. Now, several years ago, they came out with this thing called for the MBUX infotainment system called Hey Mercedes. So it was this digital assistant or sort of concierge in a way. So you could say the wake up words, Hey Mercedes. And then you could say, oh, well, I'm feeling cold. And then it would tell you, oh, I've raised the temperature by 2 degrees or 3 degrees. Or whatever. Or you could say like directions to, you know, this donut shop, whatever the name is. And then it would automatically key it in and start navigating you there without you, you know, keying in anything. It was very convenient. It even had a sense of humor because I was testing a Mercedes with that system. And I told it, tell me a joke. And it said something to the effect of, I would, but the people who programmed me are German. Now, this newest version of it, that they're showing off and which will be rolled into vehicles on the upcoming MMA platform. They've designed it to be, among other things, more empathetic. So they've changed the voice, and like you can call up the assistant without saying, "Hey, Mercedes." It responds to learned behaviors and context as well. So it's the result of them combining this system with their in-house developed MBOS, their operating system. So yeah, and then it uses visual cues and lighting and other elements to communicate, but also, you know, respond to what you're saying. So it can be, it can use like certain lighting to emphasize things. Yeah. So that's the main thrust of this is they just want it to be more empathetic.
Are they going to have it with Apple Play?
I would imagine so. Yeah.
Cause then if this Mercedes thing is down, you could be like, "Hey Siri, why is Mercedes not responding to me? Is she mad?"
I'm staying out of that. And then, yeah, they've got this, I think they call it the hyper screen. And one of the innovations they're rolling out too is you can actually, you know, there's a in-car service where you can play movies and things like that. And there's also this updated navigation system. I think it's called surround navigation, and it can show you on the screen. Well, unfortunately, I don't have that in a slide, but it can show you in the main gauge cluster, the car you're in real time in regards to your surroundings. So if there's a car in front of you, it'll have an icon for a car. If there's a pedestrian, so it can show you, you know, what your car's in from a sort of, not a bird's eye perspective, but an outsider's perspective, which I can see that being, you know, obviously it's flashy, it's techy. I can see that being of use at a casual glance, but the more and more I see technology like this, where it's like, oh, well, you know, it has this light or it has this display in this screen, the more I just wonder, like, what happened to just looking outside the windshield and your windows? I mean, at a certain point, there's always the potential for it to be distracting, you know, but then again, I haven't tested this tech. So maybe in the real world, it's, you know, it's a fantastic thing, but that it just always raises that question in my mind. Like, what happened to just using your eyes?
Yeah.
But yeah, that's going on at just, the Consumer Electronics Show.
Definitely. Just what more of what we need. Distraction.
All right. And so you've got some additional news, and I've got my fingers crossed. It's good news.
Well, you have to put the slide.
Of course. I was setting you up.
Okay. Steve Mignante, he has a new video that came out about 2 days ago, and he talks a little bit about his encephalitis, if I remember that correctly, and how he's progressing forward. And he also gave kudos to some of the folks from Barrett Jackson that have been very helpful to him. So it's been a while since we've had an update with Steve, but if you guys go online to Steve Mignante's YouTube account, you can get an update straight from the horse's mouth.
Yeah, well, just the fact that he's updating personally is a great sign.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to guess he's not going to be a Barry Jackson this year. Maybe he will be a guest. Who knows? He'll make a show, but I don't think he's going to be an MC.
Oh, okay.
He didn't talk about that, but I just imagine he's not there yet.
Yeah, well, if he doesn't show up, he's got a great reason not to.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and so I guess before we get into the main topic, I had teased your travels, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So for you folks out in TV land, my wife's Colombian, so I always go there for Christmas because I don't need to celebrate Christmas with my family since we're Jewish. So I go there every year, been going for the past few years. And my in-laws have this Renault that I drove a little bit in Colombia. And the car market in Colombia kind of bugs the hell out of me because I think there's a lot of crap. Like, this is a new car, this Renault. And what I found curious is that, why haven't I seen this Renault before somewhere else? Not that I know all the Renaults that appear around the world, but I just didn't recall seeing anything like this in France. Not that I've been to France recently, but, you know, Renault is a French company. So I did a little research, and this Renault Logan is actually a Dacia. Now, if you recall, Dacia is a Romanian company that used to build Renaults under license when they were behind the Iron Curtain. And Renault bought out Dacia a few years ago. I'm going to guess maybe 25 years ago. Mm. So this Renault Logan actually came out. Now, it's sold as Dacia in some parts of the world and Renault and other. This Renault Logan, this generation came out in 2012. It was not introduced to the Colombian market until 2015, I believe, August. So maybe it was a 2016 model, for all I know. There is a third generation Renault Logan out now in some parts of the world, but not in Colombia. So this car from 2012 is being sold as a new car in Colombia. And this is the car that my in-laws have. So I drove it. It's a 1.6 liter 5-speed, I believe. It's got 111 horsepower, but I don't know how the horsepower is rated, but you can get an idea. It's in the low 100 range. You know, for this kind of car, it gets up to speed the way you need. You know, it does everything you can ask for. It's not fast, but it's not like a 20-second 0-60 car like a lot of, you know, 40, 50 years ago, economy cars were like that. But I guess really what I want to say about it, it's kind of disappointing, the selection of some of the homegrown cars in third world countries. You know, it's like there's plenty of smart, intelligent people. You know, the third world tag that can be applied to Colombia does not represent the people necessarily that inhabit it. It's more about the infrastructure and the economy. Mm-hmm. Yet you get these people who seem like us for the most part, and they get saddled with the kind of vehicles like this, and it's kind of a shame. Now, can you get another car that is a little bit more contemporary to modern living, the way that we're used in the United States? Yeah, but it's going to cost a hell of a lot more, and the taxes probably are going to be a lot higher as well. Mm. Now, this car is built in Colombia and a bunch of other parts of the world, but it's just kind of a shame that, you know, you have to settle for this maybe.
Yeah.
As a middle-class person.
Yeah, and that's, you know, that's something I've realized about American cars here, because even, you know, I've been spoiled by them, because even, you know, the entry-level cars here, when you compare them to the mass-market cars in other countries outside of the United States, they're light years ahead, and just in terms of safety equipment, just basic conveniences. So we've got it pretty good here.
Now, the infotainment system here, honestly, I can't really remember. I don't think it has Apple Play. Now, actually, you know what? My wife had Waze on the phone, so it had something. It wasn't like the way... It's like it didn't have Apple Play or CarPlay, whatever it's called, mm-hmm. but you could get Waze on the screen.
So okay.
That was helpful.
Yeah, there's some sort of work around there.
Mm-hmm. And I thought the climate control system worked nicely.
Oh, okay. Was it, I imagine it was pretty cold down there, huh?
No, it's summer.
Oh, yeah, duh.
It was, you know, 75, 80.
Oh, okay. So I guess you needed the AC, if anything.
No, you needed the defogger.
Mm, all right. Well, I'm way off. I'm way off.
So not a very interesting car. I will also say that my wife and I bought it for her parents.
Oh, okay.
2 years ago. So he had an old Kia, which I kind of enjoyed driving because it was just like this beater. They could do whatever.
Yeah.
But, you know, they deserved, you know, they're in their 70s. They deserved a newer car, a little bit safer.
More reliable.
I thought it was pretty reliable as long as you, well, he had to have it rebuilt, but that was his fault.
Oh, what, the engine or the?
Yeah, just, the engine.
Oh,
the
man.
Of the Kia.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, you know, when it comes to reliability, you know, I think the Kia was reliable as well, but, you know, he let something happen to it.
Oh, boy.
And now the whole world knows.
Exactly. You heard it here first, folks. Okay. All right. So, just like with every show, we have our main topic. The main topic this week, I was thinking about this a few days ago. Non-negotiables when it comes to a certain car or a certain manufacturer. Just things that if you were going to buy a particular car, things that you would have to have in that from the get-go. So, Diego, you will start us off on this one.
Okay. I like sunroofs. Moonroofs, I don't know. Is there a difference?
See, to me, I've always, and I know this is probably completely wrong, but I've always thought of when you open the shade for the sunroof panel, but you leave the sunroof in place, to me, that's a moonroof. And then when you open the panel, then it's a sunroof. But that's just me. I admit,
possibly if it's opaque and light can come in, maybe it's a moonroof. But if it's solid and light can't come in unless you open it, then it's a sunroof.
Oh, yeah, maybe. You know, I don't think they've done it in a long time, but yeah, cars used to have it where it was just a solid panel and then it would move out of the way, but now everything is just tinted glass.
I think our we have a shade in our Tiguan and you remove the shade and then it's light comes in, so it's like that would be a moonroof maybe. And then you can open it and, you know, it's a sunroof. So a moonroof is, I don't know, whatever the case of the semantics and all that, I like them because I like open air. Mm-hmm. My first car was a convertible. I like the wind. I mean, I like AC too, but I like the wind. Windows and all that, that bugs the hell out of my wife, but I enjoy it. Now, unbeknownst to me, there are people who don't enjoy it. So let me tell you a little tangent. I have a book from Marty Auto Works that shows the different districts where Mustang convertibles were sold. So like out of all the districts in the United States, I would think that the biggest market for the Mustang convertible, maybe let's say Los Angeles,
yeah,
and
exactly,
the vicinity. You know, the Los Angeles district may also include like the Inland Empire and, you know, 3 hours north. You know, it could be a lot. It's not just LA proper. But the actual biggest sales for Mustang convertibles were in the Rust Belt. Now, LA was high on that list, but the Rust Belt was the highest. And that made me realize that maybe that their summers are short and they want to exploit the weather as much as they can, and therefore they enjoy convertibles versus, let's say, California, where they got sun all the time and they don't want to be dealing with that all the time.
Yeah, well, and then it's not special because it's so abundant.
Yeah. So that being said, I'm from the Rust Belt and I do like having sun. I do have like having open air, and I do like having cars with sunroofs or moonroofs.
Yeah, whatever you want to call them.
So that's my non-negotiable.
I get that. And I could see it being even more important in a car with a dark interior, because if everything's dark around you, it can make you feel like you're in a cave. It can make it feel smaller inside.
Mm-hmm. Now, in Phoenix, I think the weather is a little bit too hot. The summers kind of suck here.
Yeah, just a little.
I really hate the summers here, but I would still want a sunroof.
Okay. Yeah. See, I mean, I enjoy them. They're not a non-negotiable for me, but I enjoy them. But yeah, like in the summer, I don't open it. I mean, I really only use it. I just open the shade mainly at night because I don't have to worry about getting scorched, especially when it's blazing hot here. All right. So that brings me to my first non-negotiable. It's no secret on this show. I've said, you know, I've wanted a Jeep XJ Cherokee for a long time, hoping to get one of these days, hopefully in the near future. And I love the looks, but I thought, you know, at the most fundamental level, particularly with that or really any Jeep, if I was going to go through all the trouble of saving up the money, you know, doing my research, you know, finding the right seller, the price, you know, inspecting it, all this kind of stuff, and then paying the money, if I was going to go through all of that, it would have to be a four-wheel drive model. Because otherwise, I just, you know, it, to me, four-wheel drive and Jeep are synonymous, you know? And the whole idea, the appeal of a Jeep, particularly a Cherokee to me, is going off-road. Now, can you go off-road in a two-wheel drive model? Of course you can. Can you get as far as you'd be able to in a four-wheel drive model? No. You know, and I just like knowing that would be there in reserve. And yeah, if you need a little extra oomph for traction to get over something, you can do that. And I think it was you, Diego, we talked about a two-wheel drive Cherokee before, and I think you had said, like, okay, well, if it's just two-wheel drive, it's basically a wagon. Correct me if I'm wrong.
I don't remember saying that, but I could have.
I thought it was you. Anyway, yeah, somebody told me that, and it makes sense.
Yeah, but on the other hand, it's not a wagon. It's still a truck with two-wheel drive. I mean, this is not a wagon by any means, not how it drives.
No, not how it drives, but, you know, it's a similar body style, albeit higher off the ground, and you don't have four-wheel drive. So I agree with the core sentiment there. Now, I just got to remember who actually told me. I thought it was you.
Yeah, it could have been me. I'm not going to remember everything I said. Just ask my wife.
But yeah, that would be a must. Also for the XJ Cherokee in particular, you know, secondary would be the 4-liter straight six and four doors. You know, they made two door models. I think they're far less abundant than the four doors. But, you know, to me, don't get me wrong, I like off-roading by myself, but it's always fun with more people there too. And as you can see, they get that kind of funky transfer case shifter there in the old XJs. And now it's off to Diego with your second non-negotiable.
Okay. I don't feel so strongly. Like, I'm willing to trade certain things for this, but I really think that a vehicle that has knobs for the radio and the climate control system will nudge me towards that vehicle in comparison to other ones. You know, there could be other aspects that'll pull me away from it. You know, let's say if they didn't have the color I liked, I really have no idea. You know, maybe it comes down to money. But I really look for things like knobs over buttons.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah. I totally agree.
Now,
with you.
This one, the radio, I guess it only has one knob. The knob, I don't know what's more important to me, the knob for the volume, the knob for the tuning, but the tuning knob is very important. I think it's annoying to try to tune to another station that's not pre-selected, and the buttons just make it difficult to find it much more. I mean, the same thing with the volume, really. You know, the same thing with the temperature, the same thing with the fan. It's just like you have a better grasp of, you know, movement with a knob.
Yeah. Yeah, I got three words for you auto manufacturers out there: grip and rip. You know, it's just nice and easy. You know where it is. You know, you get that sort of muscle memory, and it's just so intuitive instead of, you know, using buttons.
And I think they know that, but they're also trying to, you know, what's the saying that I'm having a brain fart, you know, reinvent the wheel. No pun intended, really, with this dial. It's
yeah.
A wheel. But, you know, it's like, I think they know that, but they continually come up. You know, you could have a good design with one generation, the next generation, they completely ruin it.
Yeah. I think sometimes companies get a little too cute with things. Like, they'll do tech for the sake of tech, or they'll change something in a way that to me seems arbitrary. I remember, golly, it might have been maybe a 2016. A long time ago, I was testing a CRV. And if I remember correctly, it had these vertically arranged buttons for the volume. And it just drove me nuts. I'm like, why do you have to do it like this? And then on top of that, I mean, this is a, you know, a different issue, but like, I've never had a problem connecting a phone to Bluetooth, and I couldn't, for the life of me, I couldn't do it in that. You know, it was just such a bungled, you know, interface. All right. And so this brings us to my second and final non-negotiable. And this is a case in which I put my money where my mouth is. So I'd always wanted a Mustang for, golly, probably over a decade. And I thought to myself, just like with the Cherokee, I was like, okay, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to do it, you know, a certain way. And my non-negotiable for getting a Mustang was it had to have a V8. Now, don't get me wrong. I drove a couple of the S550 EcoBoost Mustangs, and, you know, they had plenty of power. In fact, I preferred the steering weight of those to the GT models. It was this great combination of lightness and firmness. You know, there was good feel in those. But, you know, they say there's no replacement for displacement. And, you know, there's a lot of different facets to that. But I think the most significant to me, because there are a lot of, there are smaller engines that are power dense these days because, you know, they use turbocharging, a lot of them, right? So a four cylinder is not as weak and as wimpy as it used to be, you know? But one thing you just cannot get out of, you know, a smaller forced induction engine that you can get out of a V8 is that sound. And I learned that with the current generation, or more so the last generation Ford Raptor, you know, had plenty of power. It was, you know, Haas looking, you know, and yeah, plenty of power, but it just didn't have a great sound to it. Now, the current generation EcoBoost Raptor, they've improved on that. They made some changes to the exhaust system. So it had a little more presence, but it's still nothing like a V8. And yeah, when it came down to it, when I went out and got a Mustang, I got the Bullet, you know, 4.6 liter V8. And that was, especially for that generation, that was, I think, the right move to make because, you know, the V6s, you know, they never really were, didn't seem to have any sort of anything special to them. And yeah, that was the way I had to do it.
Do you still own that car?
Technically, it is in the process of being sold. So,
that guy from back east?
Yeah.
Okay, very good.
Yeah. Yeah, so, and then, yeah, you get the Coyote V8 there. All right. Now it is time for
some Auto Hunter spotlights.
Yep.
This vehicle is a 1987 Mustang LX convertible with a 5-liter, originally 5-liter V8 car. Now it has a 347 stroker with a Tremec 5-speed. Now, this looks like it came straight out of Miami Vice. But I can see that that's not Miami. So it's supposedly, well, I wouldn't say supposedly, the auction says that this car was converted by an Ohio-based shop under previous ownership. I'm guessing that's something that was done when this car was relatively new. Otherwise, it's this is, despite appearances, this is a Mustang convertible from 1987.
Yeah, it's got a lot of custom work. I'm kind of curious about the fenders and everything. I mean, maybe there was some ready-made stuff, or maybe they were custom made. I don't know.
I think there's a lot of things that are curious right now with this vehicle.
Yeah, yeah, I think they've modified pretty much every square inch of it.
Yeah, and it looks like the front end, they kind of made it look like the subsequent generation Mustang a little bit. You know, with the shapes of the headlights, but this is a fox-bodied car. The auction ends on Friday, January 12th, 2024.
Okay.
So yeah. If you folks in TV land, if you like this vehicle, if you're from Miami or Hialeah or somewhere near, this car just may be for you.
Yeah, and there's that 347. Yeah, well, a lot of A lot of different touches in there.
But this car isn't for me.
Well, I'm sure it's for somebody out there.
Yes, uh-huh.
And they've got time to bid.
There's an ass for every seat, as the Bible says.
Was that the Bible?
Well, they mentioned ox and ass, so why not?
Hmm. Oh, yeah, so they did a whole, yeah, a whole wide body thing here. You know, it kind of reminds me of what certain tuners would do with like German and European cars in the like late 80s, early 90s. You know, that whole wide body kit. Yeah. All right. Oh, and they
gauges up the wazoo.
Yeah, you can see everything. See what that car's
thinking. I like round gauges, but this has twice as many as what, you know.
But, you know, they're cleanly integrated because sometimes you see them in certain cars and they'll just be kind of, you know, an afterthought.
Haphazardly, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But, yeah, these are all laid out with, you know, a logic to them. All right. So my first Auto Hunter pick is a 2013 Corvette Grand Sport. There's a lot going on with this one that makes it very attractive. So, of course, you know, it's a C6 vet. It's got the removable roof panel. It's got the Grand Sport package, so it gets the specially tuned suspension components. Also, this has, I think this is like basically 7,000 miles on it.
And what year is it?
It's a 2013.
Okay.
Yeah, 2013, super low miles.
Stick?
No, this is the automatic.
Okay.
Yeah, so, but yeah, unmodified, as you can probably imagine, given the mileage. It's got the paddle shifters for the automatic, so it's got the crystal red over the cashmere and black two-tone leather seats. And under the hood, you got the LS3. So this one is fitted with the performance exhaust, so it has a little more horsepower than it would otherwise. So it's, 436 horsepower, 428 pound-feet of torque. And then I think this year it's got the, I want to say it's got the 8-speed automatic. And then, the chrome wheels. So, yeah, just a great color combination, LS3 power, great looks, and then on top of that, the low mileage and the Grand Sport package.
And when does this auction expire?
This one, forgive me just a second. I want to get this right for y'all. This one ends on Monday, January 15th.
Okay.
So, yeah, plenty of time to get your bids in on that Corvette. And let's see here. All right.
Okay. So my other Auto Hunter pick that is currently live, this car is going to expire, meaning you have to bid to win this car by the 17th of January, which is a Wednesday. So just over a week, just a little bit less than a week from now as this is being filmed. This car is... I was going to say it's the top of the line Oldsmobile, but that's not necessarily true. I think the 98 may be considered the top of the line, but this is their personal luxury vehicle with the bucket seats and the console and just the nice trim all around. You can see it has the full width aluminum trim, which was kind of a Starfire hallmark. This one has a maroon bucket seat interior. It's got air conditioning, wire wheel covers. Otherwise, it's a pretty basic Starfire. You can see it has a you can't see from this picture, but it's got a tachometer in the console, like a lot of fancy cars did at the time, which, you know, it's not convenient, but it's not unusual. It's got a, in 1962, GM started making their hardtops look like convertibles with the top up, so you can see it has like those ribs.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So it's a little bit formal, not as sporty, but sporty nonetheless, because convertibles are kind of sporty, you know. It's not like a fast top that would become more popular, you know, let's say in a year or two with some of the Fords and Chevys. Well, let's say Fords. And it's not a bubble top like the earlier hard tops from the previous year. These are pretty cool cars, I think there are enough people that would like this vehicle. They do like 62 Oldsmobiles. I lean towards other years for the Starfire, but they're all great. It's a 394 Rocket V8. I forget what they call the 394 in this. I think it's just a Starfire V8 in this case. It's got a replacement four-barrel carburetor, that I know, but they all came with four-barrel carburetors otherwise. Pretty cool car.
You know, I'm going to be thinking about that roof all day. I never knew that was a thing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you look at, you know, from Chevrolet through Buick, it's that way. I don't think Cadillac is that way.
Hmm. Yeah, you know, it kind of makes sense that they would do that because it's something different, but it also makes you think of something else, you know, the sexiness and the glamour of a convertible.
Yeah. And, you know, you can compare this with, let's say, a Mercury at the time. You know, they had the breezeway roof, which is completely different. And, you know, it's kind of a gimmick in a certain sense, but this one has elegance that the breezeway never had.
Mm. Yeah, I think the last episode, one of yours was a breezeway car, right?
Yeah. And let's say maybe some of the Chryslers from 62. Well, the 62 Chryslers are kind of leftovers from the 50s in a certain sense. You know, they have those canted headlights. So, you know, this one comes off of being a little bit more modern, like a little bit more diehard 1960s in comparison. So, you know, I was just trying to think of like competitors in the marketplace and, you know, what they look like compared with this. You know, this one comes off very nice in comparison.
Yeah, and very, very 60s, but in a good way. I mean, it's a good looking car. I love especially the side trim.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes it very distinctive.
Absolutely.
Now, mine is not quite as classic, but I guess you could say it's a modern classic. I've always had a soft spot for the Cadillac XLR. This is a 2006 model. This is also low mileage, just like the Grand Sport. This is about 9,000 miles. In that time, it's had an important update. So these are convertible hardtops. These shared the underpinnings of the C6 Corvette. Corporate cousin in a way to that Grand Sport we saw earlier. But it is a convertible hardtop. And as you can imagine, as with any powered hardtop, you know, there's always the possibility of the mechanical parts going out. Now, this one has had a remanufactured hydraulic pump installed. So very fresh in terms of the overall mileage, but even fresher because it has that remanufactured pump. And then there's some different highlights to this. I mean, aside from the general design and the Corvette underpinnings, now you can see one of the previous owners had those put those little faux vents on there.
I think that kind of screws up the car for me, at least.
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. I think they got them from, I want to say, a CTS.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then for all of you Mike Jones fans out there that are still tipping, it is rolling on Vogue tires. So that's something I've seen it on a variety of vehicles. I've never seen it on an XLR. So that definitely makes this stand out. And then on the inside, oh, nuts. I was hoping we had a shot of the gauges. But, you know, you've got the leather and wood, and then the gauges are actually Bulgari design gauges, so makes it even more upscale.
What's Bulgari?
It's I think it's an Italian jeweler. Like they make jewelry and high-end watches.
How do you spell it?
Well, there's two different ways technically. So Bulgari, but if you see it stylized,
it's not Bulgari.
I always say it that way, but I don't know what the, you know, official pronunciation is.
Isn't the guy that's part of the family in the Buicks, is that the guy, Bulgari?
I don't know.
He has a car collection in Pennsylvania. I want to say Nicola Bulgari.
Okay.
However you pronounce it. He's really in the Buicks.
Oh, okay.
We'll have to look it up afterwards.
Yeah.
But it sounded like you said Bulgari.
No.
Bulgari, like it's full of boulders.
No. No, I was saying Bulgari, but yeah, maybe it is Bulgari. But they also have a stylized way, and it looks like a V. So anyway.
It's probably just a Roman thing.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
It's good to be the king.
You'll have to tell me what that's like.
I don't know.
And then, of course, under the hood, you know, the V8 power is a 4.6-liter Northstar V8. That's hooked up to a 5-speed auto. Output is 320 horsepower. So, Yeah. I've always loved these. You know, they're very distinctive. They got obviously a lot of hard lines and sharp edges. But then the fact that this is based on a C6 Vet, it just makes it such an unusual combination of traits.
These cars would be better if they were called Evoque.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I guess that was back in their alphanumeric days.
Yeah, it's a shame because the show car was great. It had a great name, and then they brought it to production and gave it that horrible alphanumeric thing.
Well,
so I love you.
Yeah, you know, before I forget, if there are any of you out there that are just as enamored with this car as I am, you have until Wednesday, January 17th to bid on it.
Maybe you'll outbid Derek.
I'm sure they will. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of this episode of the Drive the Bid podcast. We appreciate you watching or listening or tuning in any form or fashion that you did.
Thank you, Derek.
Yeah. Thank you, Diego. Please stay tuned. We'll be back next week with another episode.
Don't forget to press like.
Yeah, like and subscribe. That definitely helps and get the word out. But in the meantime, please go check out classiccars.com and autohunter.com.
Thank you.